Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Author Sebastian Younger, who wrote a lot of great books and done a lot of great reporting, and also wrote The Perfect Storm. He's going to come in and tell us how life works, or zoom in, I should say. And then we got the news coming up as well.
Do you want to be a part of Adam's next book? Is this a joke? Submit your questions for Ask an Asshole by emailing them to askhole@adamcarolla.com. Please include your name, age, and location. Ask about any topic you need the Ace Man's advice or answers on. That's askhole@adamcarolla.com.
Well, Sebastian Younger has joined us. His book is called Freedom. It's available now on Amazon. And it's a very interesting endeavor. We should get into that. Good to see you, Sebastian.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
So let's go through Freedom. You and two or three other friends sort of embarked on a journey.
Yeah, there were guys that had all been in combat. We'd all been in combat. Two of them were soldiers, actually. And this is years ago, but we walked along the railroad lines from Washington, D.C. We're headed to New York, and we got to Philly, and we decided to head west instead for Pittsburgh. And so we walked about 400 miles along the railroad lines, which is this sort of weird no man's land that cuts these swaths across America. You know, we were sleeping under bridges and in abandoned buildings, and we didn't have a tent or anything, just a tarp and cooking over fires and getting our water out of creeks and dodging the police. And as I say in the book, over 400 miles, you know, every night we were the only people who knew where we were. And there's many definitions of freedom, but surely that's one of them. And, yeah, it was an extraordinary trip.
Did you embark on the journey with the intent of writing the book, or was this just something you wanted to try?
We just did it to do it, you know, like the railroad lines cut straight through the middle of America, straight through the middle of everything. The ghettos and the farms and the rich suburbs and everything. And we wanted to encounter America and encounter ourselves. We were carrying 60, 70 pounds. And, we were going through some dodgy areas. Someone shot at us in Pennsylvania, in Delaware. The cops were looking for it, or Maryland. The cops were looking for us with a helicopter. It was an odd trip, and we became completely sort of interreliant on each other.
And what did you learn?
Well, that freedom's hard won. I mean, you know, we were carrying everything. We were free because we were carrying everything we needed on our backs, and we were staying out of sight of the authorities and anyone who would prevent us from sort of like going where we wanted. And we were walking, 10, 15 miles a day. Once we did 40 and 40, 40 miles in 40 hours, basically broke ourselves physically. But we were sort of in control of our own destiny. And we could only do that because we were completely dependent on each other for all the sort of tasks we needed for survival. And that, to me, that's a sort of miniature version of this nation. Like, none of us would survive more than a few days by ourselves. Humans die immediately in nature when they're by themselves. But we thrive when we're in a group. And Americans have chosen to be in a group of 330 million. And that does not come free of obligation. And that's where the great conversation starts about what constitutes our rights and what constitutes freedom and what constitutes a government that's too controlling.
You know, on a very small scale, there is a mindset which I always have, which is if you travel around like I do and you do shows and you end up in Naples, Florida, or Appleton, Wisconsin, or somewhere like that, there's always the Saturday. Saturday day is the day you have nothing going on. You do two shows Friday night, you roll in late Friday to do the shows, and then you got to leave Sunday morning. But Saturday day, where Oklahoma City, wherever I'm at, you walk around alone and you realize this isn't my town. Mm-hmm. I have nowhere to go. I don't know anybody. I'm just walking through as kind of an observer of what goes on in Appleton, Wisconsin. This will go on when I leave, and it was going on before I got here, but I'll sort of observe it now. There's a feeling that's different. It's much different than being in your own, on your own turf, like usually with some purpose. Like, I got to go get my hair cut, then I'm going to go to the Galsons, then I'm going to go back home. It's a weird feeling. I would recommend it highly. It's not the extreme that you experience, but just that little safe 3-hour version of it. It's interesting. You're walking around and you realize no one really knows you or cares that you're there. You feel sort of autonomous. And you're just observing, and it's an interesting experiment.
Yeah, I mean, no one knew where we were, right, for 400 miles. And we were, it was an extended version of what you're talking about. We were completely unaccountable to anybody. We were accountable to reality, and, you know, it's easy to get hit by a train and killed. We were accountable to being hungry and cold and wet and tired and having the cops look for us or whatever. Like, we ran into a criminal motorcycle gang north of Wilmington and had a little touch and go moment with them. You know, whatever, all kinds of things happened, but we were not accountable to another person. And that's pretty intoxicating. You know, about 10,000 years ago, humanity reached this sort of fork in the road, and some societies became agricultural societies. They started planting grains and crops, and they became quite wealthy and sedentary. And people in those societies were very easily controlled, because once you had fields, you couldn't just leave if the ruler was oppressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some societies remained nomadic and under the control of no one except themselves. And they are typically, nomadic societies are typically much poorer, materially poorer, but they're freer. And that's, you know, that sort of like ancient decision. Do I want to have more like security, physical security around me and less freedom? Or do I want to be mobile and poor and totally autonomous? And that, you know, that's true for individuals as well as for societies.
That reminds me, and you may know, if you know about it, I promise you know more than I do. But many, many years ago when I was in Israel and we're kind of doing the tourist thing, and you see these people sort of on the side of the road doing their own thing, and they dress different, and they seemed almost like they didn't even realize there was a world going on around them, and it was the Bedouins. And yeah. And again, if you know about it, you know more than I do. But it's so interesting to have these members of society who aren't members of society, members of your society.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And you know, nomadic societies like the Bedouin can coexist with farmers very, very well, because typically they use the poorer land to graze their sheep.
Mm-hmm, right.
Farmers use better land. So they're not necessarily in conflict. But what's really interesting is that mobile societies typically really look down on their wealthier sedentary counterparts, which is odd because usually the poor don't look down on the wealthy, right? And if anything, it's the other way around. But there's so much you can, there, freedom comes with mobility to such a degree that there's this odd sort of arrogance by the mobile. And so there was a tribe in a mobile tribe, a nomadic tribe in northern Iran, I think it was, called the Yamut. And they had this saying, this song. It was, "I do not have a mill with willow trees." In other words, I'm not a farmer. "I do not have a mill with willow trees. I have a horse and quirt," quirt being a whip. "I have a horse and quirt. I will kill you and go." It was just incredible arrogance that they looked down at the like wealthy, sedentary valley dwellers, that, you know, overnight these guys would be gone. And sedentary societies have a sort of interesting insecurity about themselves, even though they're wealthier. And, you know, even today, you know, we have a tendency to sort of look at mobile groups like motorcycle gangs and sort of romanticize them a little bit, even though they can't possibly have the wealth that a sedentary person has because they have to move it around all the time.
Well, so how does this apply to our sort of modern society or Western society? Because I was talking to someone the other day and I just said, I love a road trip. Like, we don't need to fly to Phoenix. Let's drive to Phoenix, like in air conditioning, not with a tarp over our head like you. But what I'm saying is I do believe there's something in everyone who's got a little wanderlust and who likes the road trip and likes to take off on the motorcycle or the mountain bike or whatever it is. I think we can all agree that no one really wants to hang out with the person that's just binge watching My 90-Day Fiancé and never leaving the apartment. On the other hand, it can hit an extreme where it's hard to nail these people down in a relationship or a job.
They're ramblers.
Or whatever. Yeah, they're rambling men. What do you think the balance is? I know it's different from individual to individual, but I feel like maybe we're doing a little too much binge watching these days. And then there's another side of society that's just going to... A large group of people hanging in binge watching, and then a smaller group saying, "I'm going to go hike the John Muir Trail."
Well, you know, we're humans are we're social primates, so we need to be in groups to feel secure and happy, and we're adapted for movement, right? I mean, humans' ability to move over to cover ground is absolutely extraordinary. The 1,000-mile world running record is 10 days.
Wow.
The math on that's pretty easy, right? Averaging 10 miles a day. Extraordinary ability.
Wait,
obviously
100 miles.
I'm sorry. Did I say 10? Sorry.
Yeah.
There's my math for you. 100 miles a day, right? So obviously we're adapted for movement. And when we don't use things that we're adapted for, in terms of our health and our state of minds, we don't do very well. And so, you know, what I would say is that sort of mobile, that taste we have for mobility is an ancient one. And it's an important one to, I don't want to say indulge, it's an important one to exercise.
Right, literally and figuratively. Yes, Gina.
Yeah.
Of course, it makes sense. Like you said, as a species, we're supposed to be in groups. And like you said, you know, you were doing this trip and you couldn't have done it alone. But I'm wondering, with that particular group that's always together and has to work together and is going for as long as they're going, and you don't know where you're going, was there anything that stood out to you as the sort of something that got kind of fraught or something, whether it was irritating or even dangerous from somebody else that you really had to, you know, pull yourself back before you killed this person?
We never got to that point. I mean, of course, there's tensions and frictions in a small group, any kind of group. If you're as tired as we were, there isn't a lot of room for irritation.
Right.
And, you know, we all needed, you know, the tasks, you know, people had to get what we had to get water, firewood. We were, you know, in the winter, we were, you know, it was 15 degrees out and we didn't have any shelter. Right. And what was interesting is that we would pass it, for some reason, it was always men, but we would pass men and they would say, it's happened several times. They would say, "Listen, give me 20 minutes. I'll be back with all my gear. I want to go with you guys." They wouldn't know us from Adam. I mean, we'd see them on the railroad
tracks. It's a Fight Club situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in the middle of the winter. Like, what is it about four guys you don't know walking down railroad tracks in midwinter that makes you think, "I got to get with those guys.
I got to be a part of this.
I got to be a part of that." It's very, very appealing. And so, you know, basically the deal was you do what needs to be done for the group to survive and be comfortable, or you're not part of the group.
Right.
And in exchange, if you're struggling, like one time we were walking through 115 degree heat index, it was just unbelievably hot. And one guy really started to struggle. And another one of us took his pack. So now he's got two packs, 60 plus 60, 120 pounds on his back, maybe a minimum 100. That's a big load on a 100 degree day. Everyone in the group knew that anyone else would help them if they possibly could. And that sort of reciprocal arrangement to have each other's back is typical of a platoon in combat. Mm. It's typical of our human ancestors. It's how small groups survive in the wild. And so what's interesting is that your safety and because your safety, your freedom comes from being in that group, but it's also the thing that you owe the most to. You might even owe it your life, which obviously is not a form of freedom. So that's the eternal human balancing act.
Well said.
What do you think about what's going on politically? It feels, in terms of freedom, it feels like government is getting big fast. That's how it feels to me. And I'm not a fan of it, but tell us your perspective on it.
I mean, big, you mean in terms of expenditure, I guess.
Yeah, I just mean in general. I mean, I guess it's just living in California and coming off all the mandates and lockdowns and all the rules and all the regulations. It just, it feels like overreach to me. It feels like things sped up in the last 18 months. You know, we covered more. I feel like if you're looking at a chart of sort of government and overreach and rules and freedom, we covered more in the last 15 months than we'd made up in the last 15 years. That's my California perspective.
Yeah, I mean, listen, crises in every society, crises engender rules. The organizing group. The people in charge of the group, whether it's a platoon or a country, come up with rules that they think will keep the group safe. And they may be wrong. You may disagree with them, but that's how groups function. So, you know, during World War II, there was a blackout order in New York City, right? I mean, I knew a guy whose job was to, like, knock on people's doors to get them to turn out their lights at night because they were afraid of being bombed by the Germans. Right. You had to turn out your lights. Right. So that's because World War II was a huge crisis. And so anytime a hurricane hits an area or a tornado, immediately sort of rules by consensus or actual regulations are imposed to sort of like keep people safe. The mask mandates, you know, were they excessive or not? I'm not a doctor, but I can't answer that. But what I'll say is that that kind of reaction by the group is like pretty typical. You know, people on life rafts ration water, you know, and that's done by the group to keep the group alive. So there is recourse through the courts. In a democracy, there's recourse through the courts and through the ballot box. And, you know, that's one of the great things about a democracy is you actually don't have to shoot it out with pistols. You can go to the courts or you can just vote the bastards out. So to answer your question about government, I mean, I think we're in a pretty horrible moment where politicians are acting very, very cynically and putting their own personal interests ahead of the country. And I think the whole damn lot of them should walk along the railroad lines for 400 miles. And when they get to Pittsburgh, I think they'd have some respect for each other and they'd probably be more collaborative.
Or maybe a train will just hit them.
Be nice. Yeah,
and we'll get out of this.
Well, it's funny you guys had that conversation or that question because I was having a concurrent thought at the same time when you mentioned earlier in the interview rights and freedoms as it pertains to the group and responsibility of the one to the whole, et cetera, et cetera. We just came off of a whole, you said, 15 months of people complaining that their freedoms are being trampled because they couldn't go into, I don't know, a bar or they couldn't shop at Trader Joe's without wearing a mask. And it's like, well, you have responsibility to the group. Whether you like it or not, that's, we can have that debate, but it's the conflating of rights and freedoms.
Well,
I mean, they misuse the word. I mean, I think George Bush started that. Maybe he didn't start it, but he definitely participated in it. He said, you know, Al Qaeda hates our freedoms, and he put the plural on the word, which is sort of a little grotesque. But you know, Al Qaeda didn't hate our freedom. They wanted us to stop collaborating with Israel and wanted us out of Saudi Arabia. Like our freedom is granted. We granted ourselves our freedom. It had nothing to do with Al Qaeda, right? And so, but the thing about that word is that it's one of these eternal human values, right? I mean, it's one of the few things people will die for. And people will die to defend their community, and they will die to protect their children, and they will die to maintain their autonomy, to maintain their freedom. So as soon as someone throws the word freedom out there, they think that everyone else will be like, oh, yeah, right, you're fighting for your freedom. We'll back off. Like, you know, we get it. Actually, what people are talking about is their rights, and their rights are granted by the group to the individual. You know, you do not have the freedom to drive on the left-hand side of the road. You just don't, right? Adam. I mean, you can try.
I had to do it momentarily today, but there was a truck blocking me. Here's how I would answer Brian's question or assertion this way. As someone who's done a lot of building, when you build and you have to pull a permit, then you have to deal with a bunch of codes. Mm-hmm. And nobody says no codes make sense. There's always a lot that are sort of steeped in reality.
Sure.
They come in and they go, we need you to do this thick a rebar and this deep a footing. It's usually a little overkill, but there's a bunch of that. then there always be a few that are just overreach. Like, there's no reason to do it. It's not about safety. It's a code.
Doesn't make sense.
So when you're talking to the person, you're kind of going, I'll do X, Y, and Z. That all makes sense to me. But you're then saying, I need a third staircase when I only need two, and it doesn't make sense to me, which is walking on the beach with a mask. So that's, I think that's where the problem comes, right. And that's where the intricacies and nuance of society start to happen. And there's where the arguments sort of come in.
Right. And I don't know if you can be ticketed for not wearing a mask on the beach, but it's possible that if you were and you went before the judge might be reasonable to say, you know what, that doesn't make sense. Laws change, right? And you can get a variance for codes. I mean, there is a process for contesting things that we as a people feel are unfair. There actually is a process for it. But at the end of the day, you know, who hasn't sat at a red light at 2 a.m. while no cars are going in the other direction? Right. And just thought, this is how it's done. And right now, there's no reason to stay here. But
Interesting. Come on. Interesting that he pulled out at that moment.
I would argue a drive through those red lights.
That's exactly.
If there is no reason why you should be there, then do it. I've now expanded my left turn driving repertoire to going through those. We'll see if we can get Sebastian back.
You'll be happy to know we did that last night with Tessa in the car driving home from La Quinta. There was a blight that was clearly, we'd heard from the locals, it was defective, right? It wouldn't turn green. The light was on Jefferson going north. The light was red for something like 5 minutes, an absurd amount of time. And those cars backed up, and Christy, to her credit, pulled into the left turn lane, went around the cars and threw the lights.
Good girl.
Badass.
All right, well, here's something out of left field that I was thinking about when I was watching The Partridge Family. I'm obsessed with, like, 70s hair movement, and we always talk about, like, Keith's hair got really long,
bangs.
And he'd be like, any excuse to move the hair, like, he'd be standing in the kitchen, and his mom would walk in and go, hi, Keith, and he'd whip around in slow motion, like, if I'm standing at the sink, and my mom walked in, I'd go, hi, Chris, and I'd continue doing what I was doing, but I wouldn't whip it around, so hair's moving, Lori was, like, flipping her hair in all the time, and I thought, a lot of the hair dressing, a lot of the styles were there for movement purposes. But then I started thinking about this. My for some reason, my mom, I don't know why, I guess she's old, she sent me some picture that her helper found of me when I was 25, and I just got a haircut earlier that day. I had the same haircut. But I thought to myself, what decade did hair change the most? Now, you can go from 50s. Everyone had the pomade and the stuff. Doesn't feel like the 40s changed that much to the 50s.
It's going to be hard to beat the 60s, dude. Like, the early 60s were pretty much still the 50s.
I got to tell you, though, but pull out some of those early 90s, late 80s chick. Every chick looks like Bon Jovi, like crazy.
Giant bangs.
Giant hair. And then I thought, never less than the last decade, from 2010 to 2020, that's a zero
that
burger. There's
much?
Zero. Yeah. Is that the only? I remember big changes from the 70s to the 80s, the 80s to the 90s. Mm-hmm. Zero. Even we talk about Ryan Seacrest and frosted tips and stuff.
And
then there's messy bedhead.
Yep.
Look. Did anyone change anything from 2010 to 2020? And then what does that say about us? What does it say that we're not conforming, that we're not going along? Sebastian, you back on with us?
I'm on. I'm so sorry. My Wi-Fi just completely died.
That's all right.
I don't know what happened.
That's fine. We'd moved on to talking about hairstyles.
the government obviously didn't like what I was talking about.
Yeah,
they heard you talk about variants and said, no thanks.
Very coincidental.
Can we talk about Perfect Storm or The Perfect Storm?
Of course, yeah. Anything you want.
Well, first things first. Brian and I both very much enjoyed that movie. Gina probably didn't see it. Otherwise, she would have enjoyed it as
Correct.
Well. I'm a sucker for those kind of big storm movies, whatever. I love Master and Commander and
movies
like that. Very good. We were playing our Rotten Tomatoes game a few months back, and we're surprised that it was in the 50s or the 60s. It was like low for what? In the what? Oh, we're going to write it down. 47.
Yeah, I remember, about 50. Yeah.
What? And I know you didn't. You wrote the book. You didn't direct the movie. But thoughts. And how did the whole idea come to you?
Well, I was living in the town of Gloucester. I was a high climber for tree companies, and which can be dangerous. If you make a mistake, it definitely can be dangerous. And I did make a mistake. I hit my back of the leg with a chainsaw. I was up in the top of a tree on a rope, and I whacked my leg with the chainsaw and tore it up. And I was sort of limping around Gloucester in the fall of 91, and thinking about my future. I wanted to be a writer. I didn't quite know how to make that happen. And this huge storm hit, and it sank a local boat named the Andrea Gale. And afterwards, I thought, oh, maybe I'll write about dangerous jobs. And I got hurt doing a dangerous job. Maybe I'll write about dangerous jobs, and I'll write about the Andrea Gale and what happened in the town of Gloucester with this big storm. And so I put together a proposal and sent it out. And while I was waiting, I went off to Bosnia to cover the Civil War. And I was in Sarajevo in 1993. I thought maybe if I can't sell a book, maybe I'll be a war reporter. I mean, I was really lost. I mean, I was really grabbing at straws at that time. And I came back from Sarajevo because I managed to sell the book sell the contract.
It's interesting. You're like, I need to do something that's more dangerous than tree topping with a chainsaw. Maybe I go to Sarajevo.
Yeah, not a ton more choices after that.
So I have to know then the question I've had for sadly since I saw the movie, how did you piece together the events of what happened?
Oh, well, I just interviewed everyone I could about fishing. I interviewed everyone else who was out there on other boats in that area for what the conditions were like. I looked at the radio transmissions. I talked to the Coast Guard. But at the end of the day, there were, starting with some hours before they sank, there was just a hole. There's just no information. So, the way I filled that as a journalist was, I had other people who knew what they were talking about, like other fishermen, talk about what it was probably like on that boat. So I would just quote them as saying, yeah, they were probably going through this or that, and wave heights were 60 feet. So wow. I've been through that once. And when it went, that height, that kind of wave height, this is what happens. And so it was all, I've never fictionalized because I'm a journalist, obviously, but by talking about to other people, I was able to sort of fill in what was likely to have happened for those guys.
And then could we explain why it's under 50% on Rotten Tomatoes? Did you enjoy the movies we did?
I haven't seen it since it came out. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's a big epic Hollywood film and, with all the pros and cons that come with that. So, I don't know. I mean, I haven't thought about that movie in a long time.
Well, sorry, or you're welcome. I don't know which one it should be, but it was very, very enjoyable film. So have you always had this kind of relationship with danger where you wanted to kind of put yourself into those vulnerable situations in order to feel a certain way? Because it seems to be a theme of your life.
Well, I think people that do dangerous jobs are doing them not to have a feeling. I think it's because that work is can be fairly well paid. The climbing that I did was really well paid. And for me at that time, it was like easy money, fishing for a lot of offshore fishermen, mm-hmm. they can make pretty big money doing that. That's why guys go to Alaska, logging. I mean, all those professions, like, I mean, you're not going to be a millionaire, but it's definitely more money than working at the corner store. And so there's a huge appeal in that. But also in a situation where you're at risk, it brings out your highest capabilities because you're trying to safeguard yourself. And being utilized at that level always feels good to people. And so I think particularly for young people, young men, like that state, that sort of like critical state where they got to be on point, like on top of it to get through this okay, whether they're a soldier or logging or commercial fishing or whatever it may be, that's there can be something a little bit intoxicating about that.
Yeah, I agree. And no, I understand you get paid more to do more dangerous jobs, but Some people just won't do them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're willing to do them. And then also in the book Freedom, I mean, you guys taken a, was it a four, how many, how long was the
400
the track? 400 miles with
400 you know, miles. Yeah.
With
yeah.
With, you know, juice boxes and tarps. I mean, that it just seems like, seems pretty self-imposed to me. I just didn't know what your relationship with danger was.
Yeah, I mean, mostly it was hard, you know, like, I mean, we were walking with 60, 70 pounds, and we were walking 10 plus miles a day, 15, 20, sometimes, you know, whatever. Mostly it was really hard. There were some moments of danger or stress, but look, I mean, as humans, we're wired for that, right? I mean, we evolved in a very dangerous, difficult world, and, you know, if anything, you know, affluent, wealthy society produces incredibly high rates of mental illness. Anxiety, depression, suicide, you know, that you don't really don't see those rates in hunter-gatherer societies, even in poorer societies. And so, you know, there's something to be said for all that ease, but it comes with costs. And it's sort of surprising that people aren't happier in a safe, comfortable environment, but they're actually not particularly happy.
I was talking to Dr. Drew about this recently, and we're trying to figure it out, which is some alarming number of 60% of maybe men or men and women, but maybe men between like 18 and 34 say they have depression or mm-hmm. say they have emotional, you know, they're on the spectrum to something. And I was like, that's an alarmingly high rate of young people. When I was 23, no one discussed how they felt. Unless they were horny or hungry.
They would honk.
Yeah, they would honk if they were horny. Like, it was like, I don't know, it was a kind of a weird luxury item to sit around and explain that you're on the spectrum of something. It was more like, we want to have fun or we want to fuck or we want to sleep. Like, it just wasn't discussed. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think social media has helped people's states of mind much. I don't know. I think there's a lot of things going on. I think also society has decided that one's own state of mind is of interest.
Yes.
And so so basically what you're saying. But I also think that modern society is extremely stressful for people. I mean, so something like 50% of teenage girls suffer from anxiety. 50? That's insane. Right.
Well, keep in mind that the tennis player withdrew from the French Open.
Please don't burn another story. Oh, yeah. Sorry, so
for mental health reasons. And that had Twitter very divided.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I think it's going to be hard to get accurate data because Drew was saying, wow, can you believe this alarmingly high amount of people that are having mental issues? Right. And I said, but it's now in vogue to talk about. It's right up there with having a lesbian affair with your roommate in college. These things were unspoken. Now people are bragging about everything.
Yes.
It's hard to tell what percentage of women had a lesbian night. Well, we don't know.
Because
nobody knows.
Well, and I've mentioned that here before. Growing up having, you know, anxiety and depression.
And a lesbian affair?
Thank you. Was incredibly shameful to the family. And we did not talk about these things, and we made up all kinds of excuses why Gina couldn't leave the house. And who knew, you know, a scant how many years later, like, there's a million podcasts about it.
Go ahead, Sebastian.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, one metric that's, you know, very black and white is the suicide rate. And, and you know, modern Western societies have very high rates, you know, which they shouldn't. I mean, arguably they shouldn't. And, you know, in poorer societies, the rate goes down. And it's, you know, it's odd. It's counterintuitive. And so there's something about modern sort of mass mechanized society which provides us with a lot of predictability, a lot of ease, even wealth, that is not great for the human spirit. I mean, that's clear just looking at the suicide rate.
I think it's probably the same with obesity. Like, you have all this abundance, you have all this, you can get whatever, whenever. Mm-hmm. You think it's such a blessing, and everyone's fat, has diabetes, and miserable. All right, on that happy note, Sebastian Younger, I know you got a heart out, so I'll give the book a plug, Freedom. It's available now on Amazon, and it's a very interesting tome. Thanks, Sebastian.
Hey, thank you very much. Nice talking to you guys.
I appreciate it. Interesting guy. Yes.
I have an answer for you of why a good reason, not the reason, but a good reason why Perfect Storm is so low rated on Rotten Tomatoes. It got, you know, mostly negative reviews at the time, or middling reviews or whatever. There was a glut of disaster
natural
movies
disaster
in the 90s, and Perfect Storm came at the end of that glut. Like, there was Dante's Peak, and there was Deep Impact, and there was Armageddon, and there was Independence Day. Even Titanic is a disaster movie. Like, there were so many because of the new advancements in CGI. And I think by the time a good movie like Perfect Storm came around, it was just fatigue. It was like, enough with the disaster movies and the CGI and things destroying things.
Yeah. I hate it when they factor in a bunch of other shit.
I agree.
Like, oh, your older brother was a shitty student, so you're going to have a hard time in my calculus class. Yep. Like, really? How about we just do it
that way?
On the merits of what it is? Tennis players? I don't think they're in WNBA or golf. It's not WNBA. No. It's probably not soccer.
No, for sure not.
It's got to be tennis.
Yeah.
There might be some Olympians out there who got, like, endorsement money.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it must be her and the Williams sister.
Exactly. And that's...
UFC fighters.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 'cause some of the higher tier ones.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The mainstream. So the thing about this, and if you're not super familiar with the story, is part of your agreement for doing this tournament is you do press. But she's, like, super freaked out by these press conferences, and it throws her off her game, and she's terrified of doing it. She's, you know, very shy.
She needs to take a chill pill.
That's right. And she finally said before the tournament, like, I'm not doing it. Like, you want me to play my best? I can't do it and do these press conferences. So, which is, I think, essentially breaking her agreement. So she's just not doing any of it. And I thought that was interesting because at first you're like, you know, do your job. But it's like, well, that's not her job. Her job is to play tennis.
She gets $37.4 million.
More than Serena.
Female athletes are the highest paid income.
Yeah, all the yellow bars are tennis. And then Alex Morgan at the bottom is a soccer player.
Wow.
Wow, that's the sport, man.
Fucking A.
I mean, 37 mil, not too shabby.
I want Tessa to be an average tennis player.
And how many of those names have you ever heard? Two?
There's the top one, and then there's Serena Williams, and then after that, I don't know any of the names.
Secretly
on
the
there.
Richest in the sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's out and going to get herself together. You know, things are coming back. I have some concert news, some movie news, but people are still making those pesky Zoom mistakes. As things open back up, a member of Canadian Parliament has once again been caught unawares on a webcam, according to CBC. William Amos said in a statement posted on Twitter that while he was taking part in a virtual session in the House of Commons, he urinated without realizing his camera was on. The Quebec MP says he's temporarily stepping away from his role as parliamentary secretary and from his committee work so that he can get help.
Why he is did it not pointed at you for urinal?
He did not elaborate on what kind of help, but last month he made headlines because he appeared naked on one of the feed's virtual question and answer periods because he claims he was changing clothes. So he might have a little exhibition thing. He was just terrible at his laptop.
Well, how old is this dude? If he's 75, I'm chalking it up to...
No, there's a picture. He's like a good-looking, like, I don't know, maybe early, mid-40s.
Pervert!
Hey, where do you, I went back, I saw my first movie in a movie theater in a year and a half.
Yeah.
Saw Quiet Place 2.
I saw that too.
And I enjoyed it. Had a little bit of the monsters, I got too familiar with the monsters thing, but I can, you know, that's something we can debate. But,
yeah.
The top of my movie had John Krasinski at the top going, hey, it's John Krasinski. I want to thank you guys for coming. And I'm like,
what?
Same.
You're fucking this shit up because you're supposed to play the dad in the small town who's going to get eaten by the lobster monster. I don't want to see you breaking down the fourth wall at the top right as we roll into it.
Supposed to go into fantasy land.
I'm supposed to go into John Krasinski who
sacrificed himself.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, I'm the guy from The Office.
Right.
Like, I don't want that.
Hey, I'm Mickey Mouse. Thanks for coming out.
Right.
Some fantasy character has nothing to do with
that. What is that? How come no one thought about
that? That was in my theater, too.
Wow.
John Krasinski going, right before pre-roll, 15 seconds, you know.
15 seconds of neither here nor there because we're there.
Mm.
I didn't remember the gist was thanks for coming back to the movies or something, but we're at the movies.
You're already
we got it. Yeah. We got the ticket. Go fucking outside and yell at people.
Interesting.
It was a little bit of
a bump.
A little bump. Like right before the movie started. Yeah, I don't want to see the guy breaking the fourth wall. Saying his name. Yeah.
Well, let's see who else is going to pull that in their movie, because I do have a list of movies, the big ones that are coming out in theaters and streaming, but mostly in theaters.
Seeing commercials.
Here we go.
Fast Nine.
That's on here. The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
Next.
That'll be on June 4th. In the Heights, which I'm very excited about, June 11th.
They held that for a year.
Yeah.
Show in theaters.
What is The Heights?
It was a Broadway hit runaway musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda when nobody knew who he was. Tony Award winning across the board, and now it's a movie. Have you heard of Luca?
Fuck yes.
Okay.
This is a Pixar movie set in the Italian Cinque Terre.
I've been to Cinque Terre.
It's fucking sweet.
It is great. Oh, okay. I'm very excited about that. Yeah. Fast and Furious 9, June 25th.
Yeah, it is.
Is that a Pride poster? Because it's June.
I got
it. Welcome, gays.
I gotta tell you, I was looking at the poster, not this poster, but the poster that was up at the movie theater, and it looked weird to me. Also, John Cena is supposed to be Vin Diesel's brother, I think. Their arms look the same, but other than that, yeah, it was kind of weird looking, the poster. But anyway.
It's Pride poster.
I'm watching the shit out of it. Yeah,
perfect.
It's got
a lot of
gay pride colors in it.
Black Widow, July 9th.
Oh, yeah. This is the one I was looking at when you're on it in real life. Okay, look at, what's her name? She's got...
Michelle Rodriguez?
No, above her, sorry.
Brewster? Oh, with the hair?
Charlize Theron.
That's Charlize?
She has Ralph Wiggum's hair.
She has Moe from the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
I think that's pure Wiggum.
Yeah.
I think it's Ralph Wiggum's hair. I was like looking at it. It's like, it looks so weird.
You're right. I don't want to wear the rubber pants anymore.
Is that a Mary Tyler Moore Show reference?
Yes. What's a diorama? You're right.
Yeah. It was weird.
And Simple Jack.
When you see it, yes. When you see it in person, it looks painted and strange.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it just, it's like they'll go to any length to try to make her not look hot. Yeah. They'll cut off an arm in Fury Road. They'll make her look like, what's her name in Monster.
I feel like this is the movie where people can look hot.
Yeah.
I don't know why she's got to get the bowl cut.
That is weird.
It's weird. Anyway,
Black Widow Forever.
Oh, Black Widow. Sorry.
The Forever Purge. Mm-hmm. I think this is the final movie in the Purge series. The end with its fifth movie. No official description. Plotline still relatively unknown. Space Jam, A New Legacy, jeez. July 16th.
This is rough.
Jungle Cruise, July 30th.
I'm secretly in on Jungle Cruise. That's a great trailer, and The Rock is always good. And if this is like Pirates of the
Blunt
Caribbean,
movie.
I'm in.
Yeah. I could
Jesse
get into
Plemons.
That.
Yeah, Paul Giamatti. Wow. The Suicide Squad, August 4th. That's James Gunn.
That's right. Taking control.
I thought about you, Brian, and how nonplussed you're going to be with this one. The French Dispatch.
What is that?
Wes Anderson shit. Fuck you.
Wes Anderson's latest film, Timothy Chalamet, Tilda Swinton, Saoirse Ronan, Bill Murray, Jeffrey Wright, Frances McDormand, Elizabeth Moss, Willem Dafoe, Christopher Waltz, many more.
Everyone's in this movie.
It's a love letter to journalists. They're right. Supposed to be in France, French journalists.
Hope it's Charlie Hebdo.
Jesus.
Is he kind of like John Waters with a budget or something? Like, I feel
Normcore John Waters.
Yeah, there's something we're supposed to get, but I'm not really getting it.
I'm trying to think of the way to put it. He's a parody of himself at this point. You know what I mean? Like the Wes Anderson formula, it can be parodied, but it's being parodied by him.
Mm-hmm.
I have very little time.
I don't know if you saw the M. Night Shyamalan trailer in there. That seemed weird.
I haven't seen it.
Buddy, I'm selling my stock in M. Night. I sold my stock a long time ago.
You know, when it's like you and it was just me and Sonny, went and saw The Quiet Place, but when you watch the whole M. Night trailer and when it's over, you look at each other and you go, well, I don't want to see that.
Like, do we know what the premise is? Does it even...
Yeah, there's a beach where you turn old.
Okay.
But I feel like most the trailers I see in the theater is sort of like being out front of a frozen yogurt shop, which is you just kind of look up and you go, well, I'll go in there. Mm-hmm. I'll see what they got.
If that's what's
might,
here.
Might be good.
Yeah.
I usually watch a trailer and go, well, I can see something there.
Yeah.
That M. Night movie, I was like, I'm not in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a clunky trailer.
What was it? It was about you go
well,
to
like
a beach
you said,
and you get old.
Yes.
It was
a don't premise. Be confusing.
Is that through sun damage? Over the course of years?
So the premise is a family on a tropical vacation discovers that the secluded beach they're relaxing on for a few hours is somehow causing them to age rapidly, reducing their entire lives into a single day.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, the trailer was weird, not scary.
Yeah.
Didn't make you want to see it.
No, right?
Did you see it too?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I pretty much had the exact same movie experience that you had, judging by everything you've been talking about.
Paul Thomas Anderson's Soggy Bottom, that's the working title. Not much shared about this. It's a film set in the 1970s in the San Fernando Valley, starring Bradley Cooper. That's September 10th.
I'm in.
Yes.
I've had such a deep love affair with Paul Thomas Anderson back in the day, and then Inherent Vice came around, and we broke up.
But can't you give him another chance?
I know. I love his movie so much.
70s San Fernando Valley.
Yeah.
I love his
Bradley
movie.
Bradley Cooper. I'm watching.
A movie I cannot wait for, September 24th, The Many Saints of Newark.
Yeah.
That is the prequel to The Sopranos, depicts the 1967 riots in Newark, New Jersey, the tension between the Italians and the black community. Dune, October 1st. No Time to Die.
Oh, that's Denis Villeneuve. Come on.
Yeah, all right. Oh, No Time to Die on October 8th. That's the 25th movie in the James Bond franchise, starring Daniel Craig, likely his last one. Halloween Kills, October 15th. The sequel to 2018's Halloween once again pits Laurie Strode, Jamie Lee Curtis, against Mike Myers. Ghostbusters Afterlife?
This is supposed to be good.
November 11th.
Yeah.
It's the upcoming installment of the franchise picks up 30 years after Ghostbusters 2 and follows a family that moves to a small town to discover their connection to the ghost-catching business.
Yeah.
Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Sigourney Weaver, and Annie Potts in the movie.
Yeah, they kind of scuttled the last Ghostbusters movie. They're like, it
didn't
really
happen. Exist. Top Gun Maverick, November 19th. I mean, nothing to say. We know. He returns 35 years after the original blockbuster to confront his past while training a new squad of graduates for a life-threatening mission.
Did you see a trailer for this? This is before my Quiet Place.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Please.
I watched the shit out of this. But I realized I didn't get my Fast and Furious trailer.
That wasn't
in my movie theater.
And the last three, West Side Story. The reason I'm bringing this up, it's December 10th. Of course, I am more than intrigued, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Oh,
so
really?
I'm very curious about this.
I don't know
this.
Why. Does Zendaya have to be in this somehow?
Ansel Elgort, who is a great dancer.
Like Ansel Elgort.
Yeah. And Rachel Zegler. I don't see Zendaya, but that doesn't mean she's not in it.
I just thought she should be in it.
She should be in it.
You're right.
Spider-Man No Way Home, December 17th, and The Matrix 4, December 22nd.
Wow.
A lot coming out this year.
How was the last Matrix, Brian?
The third one was the weakest by far of the three movies. So this, I'm hoping for at least just above average.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Well, they're back. I'm trying to think of, went to the theater. Didn't seem to be anything that different than, I think people were spread out a little bit.
In my theater, they blocked out seats between either people
or
pair.
Put tape over it or something?
No, like you couldn't buy them.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
If you wanted to shift over your car.
Yeah.
So I went with Kaylin. They would sell only two seats at a time. So Kaylin bought two sets of two seats, and we basically had like an entire row to us because all the other ones were blocked off.
I got to tell you, I like a seat. It's kind of interesting. I like a seat that has a little recline.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need the full Barca lounger. It feels vulgar to me. Like these ones, you pull a lever and the foot thing kicks out.
You're laying
like,
down watching a movie.
You're laying down.
I wouldn't be able to stay awake.
Like you're an astronaut on the launching pad in that position.
Yeah.
And I have to kind of tilt my head up so I can see the screen because I'm looking at it and I'm like, this is too much comfort.
Well, and don't you feel like you'd have to fall asleep? Like I think I'm a little narcoleptic when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a little, disrespectful. It feels a little ugly American to me. Like we're all just completely splayed out. Like it's like, how long is this movie? 92 minutes. I got to lay down.
Can it make you feel better?
It
comes from Europe.
Oh, really?
No, I have no idea, but I saw it make you feel better.
It feels very ugly.
I've never been in a movie theater that had that before.
The full.
Really?
No.
Oh, you're missing out, baby.
I'm a local girl. Where is this?
AMC Prime, AMC Dolby Cinema.
I always just end up at like ArcLight Sherman Oaks. Like I've never seen this.
Oh, and then they're ones that bring you food.
Okay. IPIC. Yeah.
What took so long to get the booze at the theaters?
Seriously,
you know what I mean? Like theaters, I don't think they had them in the 30s. Like, we'll get past Prohibition, but there was no booze in a movie theater unless you smuggled in your beer bottles, like we talked about the aforementioned rolling down the aisle and everything. But there was no beer or no cocktails or no anything, and now it's pretty ubiquitous.
Right.
But it didn't seem to exist for a good 70 years.
Yeah. My first two instincts are it promotes a rowdy talk-to-the-screen crowd, and you could be sharing it with underage, and they don't want to deal with the liability.
Yeah, I for one reason or another, but it's game on now.
Well, I'm glad you said that because if you have those drink tickets that I know you both love from Southwest, you're gonna hold on to them for a little while longer. Oh yeah, American Airlines and Southwest Airlines have both postponed a plan to resume alcohol sales. Well, if women would stop punching each other, because there's been a surge in unruly behavior by passengers that have led to increased violence.
I got to tell you, I am thinking about setting myself on fire in front of the airport in protest because I heard somebody, I was watching CNN over the weekend, I think they were talking about this, and of course they get we got to remove the booze from the planes, and then they went, and the airport. And I was like, not the airport, bitch. You fucking pry that scotch bottle out of my cold dead hands.
You got a pregame.
Do not bring that shit into the airport.
Yeah.
You can do it on the plane. Fine. We'll get some travelers going. Leave the airport alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're talking about.
That's teetotaling.
Doing it. You know, my feeling is let's do a breathalyzer on these chicks.
Sure.
They may have been sober, just fucking duking it out on a Southwest flight. We don't know that it was booze related.
That's right. That's like blaming Marilyn Manson for, kids going crazy in high school.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the George Floyd thing, which is we go, oh, that was a hate crime. But it wasn't a hate crime. It was just processed as a murder.
Right.
They didn't even, we just wove it in. Like, oh, these chicks are drunk and they're fighting on a plane. I don't know. Maybe they're just fighting on a plane.
Right.
Maybe they're not drunk.
Well, remember, I told you a flight attendant got two teeth punched out from Sacramento.
I know.
Just from a hop, skip, and jump Sacramento to San Diego. So y'all can thank her for that.
Do you guys always feel this way about people get their teeth punched out? How good were your teeth?
How strong were they?
Sturdy? Chick had an open hand. I don't know. I want to know. I don't want to speak to your dentist, but no one deserves a good punch in the face.
But
would that happen to Tony Robbins?
Oh, absolutely. You'd break your fist.
You'd fucking break your fist and go home crying.
That's right.
All right. Let me tell you about Air Medcare Network. Health insurance doesn't always cover the cost of an emergency medical flight. Even with comprehensive coverage, you could get hit with substantial copays and deductibles. Plan ahead. In emergency, Air Medcare Networks, of highly trained crews provide air medical transport to the nearest, most appropriate trauma center. With an Air Medcare Network membership, you pay no out-of-pocket expenses for the flight, and AMCN membership covers your entire household for as little as $85 a year. Secure your financial peace of mind. And as a listener, you'll get up to a $50 e-gift card with your new membership. Visit airmedcarenetwork.com/Adam. Use the offer code Adam and get that e-gift card. airmedcarenetwork.com/Adam. Adam, we have the video of the fist fight there.
Here we go.
It's a poor little kid.
Oh, she's just throwing haymakers. Shirt comes up. Too late. She's bleeding. Look at the flight attendant.
She took a sharp right overhand.
It's always the back row people.
I think the new plan with what's going on in the flights is you have to pick the diverting airport, too, as part of your flight plan.
Like, oh, really? Well, if shit goes down?
Yeah, like you go, well, I'm flying to Chicago, but we could land in Denver if shit goes down, so I'm going to arrange a rental car. You know, this is an advance. Oh, this is a 47% chance we could divert.
Or it's affecting flight patterns. You know what I mean?
Covered.
It's like, yeah. I got to go a little bit north and get to Wisconsin.
That's true.
Green Bay.
All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
I'm worried more about my looks than right. about reporting.
Gina, Gina. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, like when you're going to New York and you're sailing along the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, I'll tell you.
Exactly. Is that not established?
All right. I want to thank Sebastian Younger for zooming in and then calling in. And his book, Freedom's, available now on Amazon. And you can go to amcarolla.com for all live shows. Golden Colorado's coming up. Buffalo Rose, June 18th, 19th. Anchorage, Alaska. Raleigh, North Carolina. Minneapolis. Ooh. Acme Comedy Co. Just go to amcarolla.com for all that. Crank Anchors on tonight, 10:30 on Comedy Central. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Gina Grad and Sebastian Younger and Bald Brian. Say it. Mahalo.
You don't lie to people. I don't care if you just started this job. You told my wife the wrong thing, and you could have just said you don't know.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Catch Gina Grad on the podcast Easy Listening with Bruce Strasser and Paul Bryan on the Film Vault. The rest of us on the water cooler. And pick up tickets to see the Ace Man. Get anything you need and everything you want at AdamCarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.